Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunatu, Sahabriyam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
The Mahatma does not divert his attention to anything outside Krishna, because he knows perfectly well that Krishna is the original Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. There's no doubt about it. Such a Mahatma, or great soul, develops through association with other Mahatmas, pure devotees. Pure devotees are not even attracted by Krishna's other features, such as the four-armed Mahavishnu. They are simply attracted by the two-armed form of Krishna. They are always engaged in unswerving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. So here, a Mahatma then in the association, right, with other pure devotees, then advances. Right? So now we see here is that these pure devotees, they're not even attracted by Krishna's other features as Mahavishnu. And when we say Mahavishnu, then that will include everybody. Right? Because Mahavishnu will then mean that then there's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, there's Kirodakshaya Vishnu. Right? So the elements of Brahman and Paramatma are also included. So you're not going to be attracted by those aspects. And they're not going to be attracted by Vaikuntha. Right? So they're only attracted by the two-armed form of Krishna in Vrindavan. So in such association, these Mahatmas will advance. Right? So in other words, Mahatmas that are more situated, then in that association, the Mahatma will advance. Does that make sense? So Krishna's bringing out in these chapters how then the living entity, though engaged, should look at it, the perspective should be different. He started with himself, taken his own connection, and brought that in line with Krishna. Right? Now he's taking the element of that Krishna is more important than the engagement. Right? The engagement is for Krishna, the results for Krishna, so that will make Krishna more important. Right? Like a man works and he gets money and he uses that money for the family. So because the results are for the family is more important than the money. Right? Like that. And so therefore is that everything's for Krishna, so Krishna is more important than all these other aspects. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
The Western all or nothing mentality.
All or nothing, yes.
Sometimes it seems statements like pure devotees not even attracted by Krishna's other features, etc. Krishna's special, but
the point is that all or nothing means it's duality, right? Because duality means it's happiness or it's distress. You know, you don't take okay. Yeah, well, there's happiness, distress, and okay. No, it's happiness or distress. You know, you want to be happy, but you're distressed. You know, you're not comfortable to be okay. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, in that mentality, because it's duality, then they're seeing with a mundane vision. because there is a non-difference. So Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. But they're only attracted by Krishna. So when they're dealing with Brahman and Paramatma, they're also just seeing Krishna. But still, that's the mechanics how Krishna's manifesting. But it's Krishna who's Brahman. Krishna is Paramatma. Right? So they're only attracted by that element. So if they say, okay, we don't care about Mahavishnu, then what are they going to work with? Because Mahavishnu is the one that created all this. So then if that's the material energy is expanding from him. Right? And with his glance, then all the living entities and the whole time factor and false ego enters so that it actually will function. So he creates Mahat. Right? And then within that, then he expands his Garbhodaksha Vishnu, who then does the primary creation, you know, and makes that into something. Right? Because otherwise, Mahat, all the elements just separate, but then what are they made into? So Garbhodaksha Vishnu makes them into things. And then Kiradaksha Vishnu enters. Right? So then how will it work? Because he also mentioned here the cause of all causes, right? Yeah, the cause of all causes. So that means the cause of, why say cause of all causes? Because causation is an important element, is a consideration. You know what I'm saying? So if you say he's the best of the best, then that means you have to know what best is. And within what's best, then what is the cause of all causes means he's the original cause. But that means you can distinguish between the original cause and the other three kinds of cause. So the formal, the operational, and the material. Because if you see that, because that's what's going on in when you're looking at Mahavishnu. But you're not attracted by that, so you don't want to get stuck there. That's not enough for you. Brahman understanding Paramatma is not enough. You want it to be Krishna. So you're engaging your conditioning in Krishna's service through seeing this way, right? By engaging the karma yoga, jnana yoga. But it's Krishna who's important, so you're always trying to bring it to that point of devotion to Krishna. Does that make sense? Verse 14 describes the activities of such Mahatmas, always chanting Krishna's glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before him. These great souls perpetually worship him with devotion. So that means their determination, that means his focus. Right? So focus means then you have to understand the sambandha, abhideya, and prayojan of what's going on. Because unless you understand that, how you'll be focused. And if you're not focused, you can't be determined. Right? So that means then he has knowledge. So that's why the Mahatmas is the jnani, right? Which matures into the pure devotee. Does that make sense? You know, so that's a better Mahatma. Those who are attached to the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth are not among the Mahatmas described here. Right, so even though the Mahatma is dealing with through knowledge with the Paramatma aspect, I mean the Brahman aspect or Paramatma aspect, he's not attracted. But someone who is, then they're not a Mahatma as is described here. Right, so the impersonal aspect, because Brahman doesn't mean impersonal. Brahman just means existence. Krishna is Brahman. Everything is situated in Krishna. So it's based on him. His existence is the existence of everything. So defining that, that's Brahman, right? Remember, like we were talking about the living entity. So living entity is Brahman, but he is the Adiatma. Right? Because Brahman means what he is in the way of just, you know, what he's made out of.
Existential.
Yeah, his existence, yeah. But Adhyatma means what he does with that existence. You know, as a person, what's he going to do? So he's going to have an identity, he's going to have goals, he's going to have endeavors. So now that can be either conditioned and be material or constitutional and be spiritual. Does that make sense? So, yeah. So in here then Krishna is Brahman. He's the supreme Brahman. All other Brahmans come from him. And then he's a person. Just as the Jiva is Brahman and Adi Atma, he's Brahman and he's Adi Daiva and Adi Yajna. Right? As a person. You understand? But everything, you know, he pervades everything. So the Adi Bhautik, the Adi Atma, that's all Brahman. So it's also based on him. Right? So when you say the Brahman is based on him, that means the impersonal Brahman itself and the material manifestation, which is in a manifestation of Brahman. Right? Because Brahman is transformation. Right? It's not covering, it's transformation. Right? In verse 15, the Lord lists three types of persons who worship him indirectly, not knowing that he is the ultimate goal of their worship. Some worship him as one without a second, as diverse and many, or as in the universal form. These three levels here are the ones mentioned in 15, or this is a different point? Huh? It means the three mentioned here are the ones described here.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
Next part.
Just the last one.
Oh, okay, okay. So there's three kinds of jnanis. Okay, so then that'll come up now. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada summarizes, right, because here's that one without a second, right, as diverse and many, or as a universal form, because this one without a second, but the problem is he's one without a second, but then what about all the second? How is that connected? They can't connect it, right? So they're not actually worshiping directly. So that would include monotheists, right? Because who uses the term one without a second except monotheists? Right? Because they can't actually understand how everything is connected to him. Everything is dependent upon him. So they separate him actually from his energies. He's one without a second, so he's supreme. But his energies aren't included. So there's no such thing as he's non-dual. He's supreme, but at the same time, he is the energetic and then his energies. So his energies are dependent upon him. So that doesn't make him any less by there being energy. Does that make sense? So it's an important element. Otherwise, then it says, oh yes, you know, there's only God and that's it. Okay, great. But, you know, what about everything else? Right? So they can't accommodate. So it becomes a problem. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada summarizes three different levels of Krishna worshippers. One, the Mahatmas described in verse 13 to 14. The four types of pious persons mentioned in 7:16. Right? So here then you're making, a difference between the Mahatmas and those pious persons, though the jnani is also considered a mahatma, right? But still, they're neophyte. So here, then, we see mahatma would be someone who's situated. And then the three types of jnanis who worship the absolute truth indirectly. Srila Prabhupada describes the last category worshippers as follows: one, he who worships himself as one with the Supreme Lord; two, he who concocts some form of the Supreme Lord and worships that; and three, he who accepts the universal form, the Vishwarupa, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and worships that. Out of the above three, the lowest, those who worship themselves as the Supreme Lord, thinking themselves to be monists, are most prominent. Right? Say, they're the most prominent, but he also throws in before he gets there that they're the lowest. In other words, he's saying, of these three, you know, those who think themselves to be God, they're the most prominent, but they're the lowest. It wouldn't work as well. You've already just slipped it in the definition. then this category, which is the lowest, then you just think, oh, okay. They're the ones who think that they're God. You know, you understand? It's very, very, Prabhupada would do this a lot. He'd always, you know, define something before, you know, the category before he actually gives the detail. You know, it makes a lot of difference. Because the others, well, why do you say that? If you've already said they're the lowest, then you've already accepted that. Okay, what? And then when you explain it, then it's kind of like, okay, now what do you do? Right? You can't do anything with it. But if you say, you know, they're the most predominant, so that means, okay, they're the, you know, the big ones and that, but they're the lowest. Well, how is that? How can it be the most predominant, you know, because then you're having to deal with this chinta beta. So you've already just said they're the lowest, so anything in that category is already useless. Such people think themselves to be the Supreme Lord, and in this mentality they worship themselves. This is also a type of God worship. For they can understand that they are not the material body, but are actually spirit soul. At least such a sense is prominent. Right? In other words, it has some element of truth in that they are Brahman. So they're seeing, I'm not the body, I'm the soul. But they can't tell that the soul is not the supreme Brahman. They're Brahman, but they're supreme Brahman. And if they're monist, they make no distinction. So that means no distinction means lack of intelligence. So they're the lowest. Like that. You know, also you have to have a lot of false egos. So that definitely gets in the way of intelligence also. Right? So in other words, here, why does Prabhupada point that out? Because you start somewhere. That's the key on where you start with them. Right? Saragrahi means take the essence. Right? So Prabhupada Saragrahi. So he's saying the lowest. So they're prominent. You know, he's not saying, he's not recognizing. He's recognizing their relative position. And at the same time, he's getting to the essence, the part that's is correct. The part that's wrong is that they think they're God. The part that's correct is that they understand they're Brahman. Because if you're dealing in duality, then that means you have right and wrong. So that means any material element being dualistic will have a correct element and a wrong element. Problem is the materialist takes the wrong element. Right? But they know that the right element is there, but they just don't necessarily focus on that so much. Right? So, you, by focusing on the correct element, then you have something to deal with, something to talk about. Right? This is the preaching technique. Is what is the good of it? Right? In other words, whatever their philosophy, their position in that, whatever is the good element, you take that, leave the other part. And then from there, build so that you get the right mentality. Does this help me, sir? Generally, the impersonalists worship the Supreme Lord in this way. I said, at least such a sense is prominent, because those who are actual monists, that's see like that. But there's also probably plenty of impersonalists who don't know they're not the body, like in the West. You know, they won't know. So it's prominent of those, you know, but they're not really that strong as, you know, impersonalists. You know, the ones in the, following the, you know, the, how do you say, the Vedic literatures, you know, that are following Shankara and like this, then they know they're not the body. So that's the most prominent of them. Generally, the impersonalists worship the Supreme Lord in this way. The second class includes the worshippers of the demigods. Right? It's indirect because it's the soul. It's Brahman. It's part of God, but it's not, you know, direct. Second includes the worshippers of the demigods, those who by imagination consider any form to be the form of the Supreme Lord, right? You know, so like this, you know, that's the anything, anything is God, like that. So because the demigods are part of the universal form, but they're not actually seeing that. They just think it's any form is as good. So that's also lack of discrimination, they can't tell. And the third class includes those who cannot conceive of anything beyond the manifestation of this material universe. They consider the universe to be the supreme organism or entity and worship that. The universe is also a form of the Lord. So, They just take nature, the world. You have to make it a great place, you know. Does that make sense? You know, what are we going to leave for our children? You know, all these different kinds of things. So that's all they see. So it is worship of the Lord. Like you appreciate nature, you get purified because you're appreciating the Lord's potency. Right? But that's where it ends. So that's the difficulty, is that they're... And here it says jnanis, so that means they're intellectual, but they can't see beyond. Right? So you're intellectual materialists and you're intellectual pessimists, like that. You know, you're getting, and then the, you know, your karmis in between, like that. So these kind of persons, they have some knowledge, but it's not enough. Right? And then you can take this up to those who see farther the universal form, but as it's described in the Bhagavatam, that's described in relationship to the Supreme Lord. So you won't make the mistake that the universal form stands on its own. So if you worship material energy, you're worshiping the universal form. But the problem is you don't actually know the source of that. Right? Does that make sense? Like the prominent, very prominent disciple of Ramanuja, I don't remember his name. But Ramanuja was talking to his sannyasis and there was a festival going on. The Lord had come out, big festival. And sannyasis, they were discussing something about renunciation and attachment and all these different things. And how it's just a matter of misdirected attraction. It's actually everything's coming from the Lord. Right? And so in Ramanuja's making the point, therefore anybody can take up the process in any situation. You know, but sannyasis kind of had a doubt about this. Well, unless you have knowledge, unless you're renounced, then only you can understand. But if somebody's materially absorbed, they won't. And so somehow in the discussion as they were there, this one, you know, well-dressed, you know, man, he was carrying an umbrella. Not for himself, because it was the daytime, so the sun's out and the festival. He's holding it over this very beautiful girl and following her around wherever she goes. Right? When she moves and, you know, it's not like he says, okay, let's go here or there. Just wherever she moves, he just follows. Like that. And so then it came up, this element about, you know, what about someone like this? You know, this guy's, you know, no question of being interested in the Supreme or becoming able to take up the process, you know, through his position. So Ramanuja said, no, even he can. So they were not so sure. So then Ramanuja then said, call him. So they called him over. And he asked, dear sir, you know, we've been observing and you're carrying this umbrella and following this beautiful young girl around. So why are you doing this? What's your purpose? You know, rather than just saying, oh, you're a gross materialist, this, that, blah. He said, I'm a worshiper of beauty. So wherever beauty is, that I must somehow or another, you know, respect. I must somehow be involved, you know, interact. So Ramanuja said, okay, so you're a worshiper of beauty. So therefore, if I show you the most beautiful person, will you worship them? He said, of course. You know, that's what I do. So they took him in the temple and showed him Rangaji. Right? And so then he became a great devotee of Rangaji. Right? So that's the point, is you start at what they have. Right, the sannyasis would start, oh, you're so attached, you got to give up all this attachment, you know, you don't know anything, so you have to come to our ashram, you have to study this, that. No, Ramanuja just went for what is actually his value, because his value is Krishna, but he thinks it's the girl. But that potency of Krishna, of beauty, is coming through this girl in a more predominance than in somewhere else. Does it make sense? In other words, it's a medium. Like that. It's defined by Krishna. He'll define what is personal beauty, what it would look like. So someone who has that by their karma, then they'll have that, so more potency goes. Right? Does that make sense? So, yes.
So like Maharshi's eyes, lotus eyes.
Yeah, the longer eyes, you know, the way the nose is, the forehead, you know, the symmetry, like that proportion. All these different things that are just standard. That if those are there, then that then there's more beauty. Does that make sense? So he started with that, and from that, then showed him what's the origin of that. So that means anybody has any value, then that you can take that and then start with that and bring that to Krishna. You understand? So you're taking the indirect, making it into direct. So what's the importance? Right? So it's the other. We're not this body. We're Brahman, so we're God. Yes, so we're Brahman, but where's the supreme Brahman? Right? The demigods, they're managing everything. So that's pious. You know, you're respecting them. You respect authority. This is good. But then where do they get their potency? Because it's a post. They can lose the post, right? They're worshipping Indra, but Indra changes. Right? Bummer changes. Everybody changes. So that they know, but they don't really think about much. Right? You know, 72 Mahayugas, Indra will be there, and all the demigods. So, therefore, you don't really tend to worry about it much. Right. So, does that make sense? Yeah. The first type of jnani thinks himself identical with the Lord. This is the lowest and most common category within these three. Higher than that is the demigod worshipper, who imagines the form of his favorite demigod to be the supreme. The best of these three is one who cannot conceive anything beyond the manifestation of this material universe. He considers the universe to be the supreme organism or entity and worships that. In verse 1 to 12, the Lord already described the inauspicious results awaiting the lowest type of worshipper, the Ekatvena Jnani. In the next section, verses 16 to 25, Krishna discussed the other two categories. Verses 16 to 19 explain how to recognize and worship him in his universal form. Verses 20 to 25 describe the demigod worship as indirect and improper worship of the Supreme Lord. Right, so now we're classifying these as higher and lower. Now the impersonalist is the one who's the most renounced, generally, if he's properly situated. It means the better he is, the more renounced and the more knowledge he'll have, the better sadhana. So why is he less or the lowest compared to, you know, the demigod worshiper, who definitely is going to be a karmi? You know, it's most likely, it means how do you worship the demigods? Yes? Yes, yes.
Because it's less connected to Krishna.
Yes, because there's less to connect. Yes. Yeah, relationship. So they accept demigods. And then when you take the universe, then you're taking everything. So it's not just the demigods. You're taking the whole universe. So one, you're just taking the existence of the universe. It's just Brahman. Then you're expanding that to include a portion of the manifestation. Then you're taking the whole manifestation. Right? So now as far as knowledge goes, it's the opposite. Right? The person who just worships nature probably knows the least. The demigod worshiper knows more. And the impersonalist knows the most. But their knowledge is, you know, stolen by illusion. So this person then accepts that relation with the universe and everything, my whole life is connected and all that. So all you have to do is add Krishna and it's all in place. Right? But the other one, you add Krishna, it's kind of like, yeah, well, I'm Krishna. You know, or the demigod worshiper says, yeah, yeah, there's plenty of space. Put him in here also. You know, come on. Plenty of room for everybody. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you have to see is that's why sometimes, unless we hear from Shastra, right, and especially when we hear from Krishna and the Acharyas, then we get the correct perspective. Otherwise, then we'll take the Jnani, of course, is more important. So, if you meet the three, he will probably get the most respect as far as etiquette and culture goes, because of his knowledge and everything else. But at the same time, is he's actually the lowest.
The yogi, when he's in the last stages meditating, does he run the risk of claiming to the impersonal truth because he identified with Paramatma?
Does the yogi in jhana samadhi, that's the weakness. They'll either see the Lord, think they are, that is them, or see the Lord and then, want to now apply their mystic cities. So these are, these distractions. But the proper yogi would then sing the Paramatma, he would surrender and take up devotional service. So that means he's only beginning devotional service after the perfection of samadhi. So of course, once he gets there, then he's already on the liberated platform, so he'll move very quickly. Like the four Kumaras and like this. But the difficulty is getting there. How do you know you're going to get there? Unless you have the association. So if you have the association of the pure devotees, then you're going to progress in that way. But then if you're having the association of pure devotees, why would you use such a mechanistic system that's not very efficient, especially in this age? It wasn't, Arjuna rejected it last age. So why would it be useful this age? Like that. Because it says in Kali Yuga, everyone's mind is disturbed. The other ages, it doesn't say that. So it's disturbed. So therefore, it won't be very, very useful. Does that make sense? So therefore, all these other things of what to do, what to not do, how to situate yourself, how to engage in activities, how to pull in the senses, how to focus on the Lord, you use that through direct methods instead of indirect. Because otherwise these, it's indirect. It's not until dhyan, then the Lord is included. You know that's what you're getting to. That's why then in the earlier portions of the book it describes. But in the later portions, it doesn't really talk so much about Paramatma anymore. Not as a goal. So the lower stages, he's a goal so that you meditate upon him. But once you're meditating, he's not the, and fix, he's not the goal. So this is the weakness of the system. So it's not just, they're yogis, they worship Paramatma, so they're great devotees. Not exactly. Okay, verses 16-25. Okay, what is that here? 16-19, explain how to recognize and worship him in his universal form. But it is I who am the ritual, I the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, and the syllable Om. I am also the Rig, the Sama, and the Yajurvedas. I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place and the eternal seed. O Arjuna, I give heat and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality. I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me. So this is how to recognize him. In the universal form. Now, the demigods. Those who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly, purified of sinful reactions. They take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, or they enjoy godly delights. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. I'm the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me shall live with me. In verse 15, the Lord mentioned those who worship the universal form as supreme. In verses 16 to 19, he explains how they can advance by recognizing him, the supreme, in the universal form. In other words, they're respecting the nature, they're doing all the things, and they think that's all there is. But now how they can recognize him, it doesn't change their position. You start from there. Always the point is that someone doesn't change their position. They start from wherever they are. That's how it'll be successful, right? One can say, from not understanding this, then how do you engage somebody? Before, in the 60s, did the hippies have a place to stay? Did they have a place that was theirs, that they owned, and that they had to be there? Did they have duties to perform? Right? Means other than rolling a joint or something, you know? You understand? So therefore, they could go anywhere. So the concept of, the temple, the monastery, living together, the commune, they were into communes. So here's one, and it's all about this. So, you just have to convince them that in the city's cool, right? But generally, the ones in the city are going to there, so the ones in the country, that's another thing. Right? So the point is then they're starting from that position. So they're already taking that. So then for them to move in it is easy. Because they don't have any place. Right? But then it came to the point where you're trying to move in circles other than that. But then the point is everyone has to move into the temple or you're in Maya. Right? So that the difficulty comes is that others' position is different. So for them, moving into the temple may not be very practical. Short term, some training, this and that, but that kind of thing is not how it's being looked at. Right? Then it's okay, so this doesn't work, so then, the temple's not important, it's all about the community. And so then it's fanatic, all these different things like that. So whatever was before was fanatic. And so then, but that was the drive, that was the spirit, that was the inspiration, right? Do Catholics consider the Pope fanatic? What about the cardinals? Bishops? Parish priests? Monks? Theologians? Any of them fanatic? No, they don't consider them that way. That's their inspiration. Where do they live? In a monastery. Right? In the church. Does the community have a problem with that? No. Like that. They don't want to live in the church, but they're happy that they live there. Whatever you said, it's all fanatic and we should all just be out in the community. Where's the inspiration? Where's the focus? In other words, you have to have both. So go all one way or all the other way, that doesn't work. So the point is what position they're in, that's where they start. They're involved, they have their occupation, they have their family, or they have their situation. That's where you start from. That's where you engage them. Does that make sense? Of those, some will be more comfortable in the temple. And some will be more comfortable in the community. Wherever it is, you start there. You have to find what's the mentality. Like that? Does that make sense? So it's not that they live in the temple because they're interested in spirituality and all that, because that's generally what we think. Oh, the hippies, they were so spiritual and looking for the truth and all this and that, But was that the point that made it easy to live in the temple? No, it's because they don't have anything. They've renounced the culture. They're living a counterculture, which means, they're not living like the others do. So others have a house. No, we all live together, They have ownership. We don't own anything, Does that make sense? So you have to see what made it, not because they were spiritual. So many people were spiritual. But they don't move in. Because that's not the lifestyle that they are comfortable living. So you have to see what is the essential, what's the values. right? Then, according to that, then you get. Does it make sense? So the point is, someone who's comfortable in the temple, that's where they should be. Someone who's not, that they should be, you know, in the community. But the point is, the focus is the temple. Right? But the temple's focus is the community. So it works. But if the temple's focus is the temple, then what does that mean? What's going to be the response in the community? Yeah, empty. Why? Because if you apply the masculine-feminine principle, then whatever the masculine mentality is, the feminine will follow. So if the temple is all about itself, then the community will all be about itself. And then what's to form community? If it's not centered around activities that come out of the temple, then it's going to be centered around their own ideas. So then the bigger community is going to break into smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Right? Until it comes down to, this is our block, go around. You know, that kind of stuff. You know? Does that make sense? You know? Because otherwise that's it. So, it has to be balanced like that. So that's the comfortable point. If you can have a comfortable position at home, can be Krishna conscious, fine. But if not, the temple's there. Right? So one has to be able to see.
Is that why children are so dynamic?
Yes, because it works that way. The temple is very important. It's the center of the community. But the temple, all it does is things connected with the community. But you see, there's only 100 in the temple and 5,000-6,000 outside. Right? So that means, you know, that works. But you can, it's in proportion. Right? You know? So you see, as, you know, temples that have 5,000-6,000 devotees in it, then, you know, their community is probably quite small also. Well, no, we're counting the devotees there.
Yeah, I know.
The first time I was counting the deities.
Oh.
Like that. No, I was just joking. It's like, so, no, because it'll be small. And if they don't have this understanding, then it'll be even more small. But it's not uncommon that in a major city now, you have 300 to 500... you know, devotees in the quote-unquote community, you know, that basically rarely or at all are involved with the temple. And in the temple, they may have, you know, how do you say, 10 or 15 people. And they may, you know, but because they're not cultivating the community, you know, so if that 500 is 10 times more, 5,000, then the amount of devotees in the temple, you know, that 10 devotees will become 100. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that it's out of proportion. It's just not growing because they're not preaching to the community. They're not involved like that. It doesn't mean the community controls it, though they're involved. Yes?
Will there still be elements of society that has that desire to live in the temple?
There'll always be. I mean, just look at any religion. Is it there? Are there Buddhist monks living in the monasteries, right? Are there Christians living in their places, right? Are there rabbis? Do they have their guru, what do you call it? Yeshiva? Yeah, means they have their schools, they're learning their orthodox and stuff like that. So you always have that. You're always going to have that, no matter what it is. It's small, but you don't require. The point is that everybody's engaged. So everyone doesn't have to be in the temple to be engaged. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like here in Mayapur. How many are living in the Sankirtan building or the building just behind it? Right? Anybody here? One. Okay, so one to all this. You understand? So, it's not a problem.
And I think the community and the people that are more inclined to be, like, just say you lived in the temple for quite a long time and then you get married, but you identify more as part of the temple than, say, a community, as a
It's just the definition of community. See, the difficulty is let's say someone like Chopati, then they just have devotees. It's just a matter of how involved they are, that's all. So of devotees, some live in the temple and the majority don't. And how much they're involved in the program. So therefore, those in the temple are fully involved. But those who are not in the temple, you know, then there's different degrees of involvement. So it's just, you know, that everybody can be involved to whatever degree is comfortable for them. Does that make sense? So then it works. It works good. Like that. Because they've found that balance. They understand how it works. Right? And they've created community. So there's a common mentality. Even though the backgrounds may be very different, but they've created a common mentality. Right? Of devotional service. You know, serving Prabhupada, preaching, chanting, like this. They've successfully done that. So it's not a matter, it's not the, you know, what their schedule is or, you know, what different programs they run. It's actually this preaching mentality. That's what's created the basis. So if someone wants to learn from them, they have to get that mentality. But otherwise, devotees will go in and take notes and figure out all the schedules and what they do, and the brahmacharis do this and this and does that, and then go back to their own place and try to organize it. There's some great enthusiasm and this and that, and basically what you end up with just at the end is that you have some of these, what do you call them? The guys that kind of take care of a smaller group of devotees, mentor kind of, monitors, counselors. They have some counselors, but it doesn't really function so like that. And so then, you know, there's something, and then they'll say, yeah, we're using the Chopati. But that's the point. The form isn't the thing, it's the life. You know, it's just like that. What do you call it? You had the, in Rome, they had running water, right? They had the aqueduct, and they somehow took it to the houses, and they'd have taps and all this. And so somebody who was not from Rome visited, you know, a friend in Rome, and he was impressed with the running water. So he thought it was the pipe. So he took the pipe out of the wall, took it home, and put it in his wall. But couldn't figure out why the water was not coming out of his pipe. You understand? So they think it's the form. So they've worked, means there's a basic, of course, form, you know, of temple, community, and activities. But the detail is going to be specific. You could not take what they're doing in Chopati and do it in Delhi. You know? Does that make sense? It's a different mentality. You wouldn't be able to do it, let's say, in Madras. You would have to make some adjustments in detail. Because there's a difference, right? In other words, Bombay is Maharashtra, so it's still considered part of South India. But at the same time, it's very far north, so it won't be as South Indian as the other states. So then there'll be that element of being very much into knowledge and things like that, but they also have the element of this more sentiment, like that. Also being Bombay is then this is a very major city, so that drive, that economic drive and everything, so everybody's, you know, professional and very pukka. So that combination works there. But like Delhi, they're less, because that's North India, so they're less function on the intellectual platforms, more on the emotional. So therefore, as much knowledge as they give there wouldn't work as well there. You'd have to give more inspiration. Like that. While in South, you wouldn't have to give so much inspiration, you just the knowledge, because if the knowledge is there, then you're inspired. You understand? And Delhi is, you know, mixed. You do have the professional element in this and that, but you also have a lot who are not. It's mixed. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the difficulty is those are the reasons that something doesn't work if you apply it somewhere else. Based on that. So they've worked with that and they've come out with that form. They've been working on it for about 20, 30 years. But the principle that is based on, you can apply anywhere. You know, taking care of devotees and doing all these different things and that interrelationship, that they can do. So it can be transported anywhere. Otherwise, why is Lord Chaitanya's Harinam from Navadvip able to function in New York? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, yeah.
looking for solutions for congregation, I was looking at many things, and one video from, they have simple temple video. And the striking element is that you had the community members speaking how happy they were, how they felt at home, and how Brahmacharya said, okay, now he's married, he's part of the community, it's very nice too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's elements of, well, I saw another video of the Manipur International Parikram, and I always saw the sannyasis saying, we didn't see any bhaktas in the video, and it was like, all the spots were on there. Then I said, well, there's some things needed to be adjusted.
Yeah, so it's just a matter of focus, because it's considered the other is lower, or maya. So that's the difficulty, what we were saying before, is that the jnani, because of his knowledge in that, he'll consider, unless you come to that platform, you will not be able to actually understand Krishna consciousness. You know, but Ramanuja was pointing out, no, it goes beyond that. Anyone in any position can be connected. Does that make sense? So to be able to see that, that's the best position. Because if you're indifferent to everything, therefore you can see what's the value. Otherwise, you'll look at everything and see your value. You understand? So that's why the sannyas preaches. You know what I'm saying? So that's supposed to be brought out. Is that okay? Okay. So how can they recognize him? Krishna is the ultimate goal and shelter, right? Because you're doing anything, you have a goal, right? And you have a shelter. Shelter is your identity, your the environment you're in. You have to have these two. That's your sambandha and prayojana. If those are in place, there's abhideya automatically comes. But if one of those is out, then if you don't have shelter, then how you'll do activity? Even if you have a goal, right? And if you have shelter but no goal, there'll be no activity. So you have to see is both. Krishna is the ritual, the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, right? The butter, the fire, and the offering. So everything connected with the ritual itself is Krishna, because that's the essence that makes the thing work, right? You know, the sacrifice itself, because you're doing it voluntarily for someone else's benefit, that's the working principle. Because if you're doing it for yourself, then it's on your own karma. Right? But if you're doing it for others, then you're generating something. It's dynamic. The offering...
Is that why they chant Iram Krishna Iram Namah?
Yeah. It means that Iram Krishna, it means it's for Krishna, it's not for me. So every offering, then that's said afterwards. But you don't hear it as much anymore. It's an old, you know, it's a very traditional thing. So if you do it, no one's going to complain. But not that many do it. You know, the transcendental chant. I mean, so in the ritual, then the chanting is working, right? You're making the offering. The ghee, he is the ghee, because that's what's the medium, right? He's the fire. He's the one accepting it. That's the medium, right? Without the fire, how do you do the yajna? Right? He's the offering, what's being offered. Because, you know, any of the offering, yourself, the other items, whatever is there, the yajaman, the whole situation, why it's being done. Right? So we see all that's connected with the ritual. The offering to the ancestors, right? Because that's what makes it work. The ancestors are there, you're here. What's the connection? What benefits them? What benefits you? It's the offering. Right? The healing herb. Right, is that that's the medicine. You have a disease, you want to become healthy. What's the connection? The herb. Right? The medicine. He is the father, the mother, the support, and the grandsire of the universe. Because father and mother, then that makes, you know, everything function. So you have the direction, you have the nourishment, you know, but that's coming from Krishna. He's the support, because he's the support of that. And he's the grandsire, so he's even before the mother and father. You know, so what's before? Because that's what, you know, your grandsire is what your dynasty and all that's based on them. Then you have your mother and father. Krishna is the object of knowledge. It means all knowledge, it doesn't say certain knowledge, he's just all knowledge is meant to understand him. Right? Your transcendental knowledge directly acknowledges that. Your aparavidya then indirectly acknowledges that. Or it acknowledges it, but it does it through the medium of their particular branch of knowledge. Avidya means it does not recognize. The purifier and the syllable om. Right? So what is purifying you? Whatever is the situation, that's Krishna. Right? Means you're doing something ritualistic like that, you're purified, that purificatory, that potency, that's Krishna. Right? You see something beautiful, you know, you appreciate, you're purified. You know, you take bath in the Ganga, that potency, that's Krishna. Right? Because one does things to purify oneself. That's what good work, auspicious work is. The syllable Om, because without Om, the Vedic mantras won't function. Right? So Om is there in the beginning, Om is there at the end. Right, that's why when we open the class, then we open with chanting of Hare Krishna, and we end with it. So that's called sampat. So everything in between then functions. You chant at the beginning, then you'll be able to understand what is being presented. You chant at the end, you'll be able to remember it. Right? So that has to be there. That's sampat. He is the three Vedas, because they're the essence of what's there. Right? Because the Atharva is all the miscellaneous. Like that. So whatever is essential is all being described in the three. Krishna is the goal. You know, what you're trying to gain. The sustainer. What position you're coming from. The master. You know, he's the lord of everything. The witness. He sees all. The abode means where you're going to situate yourself. Because you have a situation, but you're comfortable in that situation. So that comfortableness, you know, you feel how you situate yourself is your lifestyle, your identity, that feeling of comfort, that this is your world, that feeling, that's Krishna. He is actually the abode. You know, you think I made all these arrangements, now this is, I'm comfortable. But that's actually, you made the arrangements, it's Krishna. The refuge means the shelter. When nothing else is working, what everything goes back into, either good or bad, it all goes back to him. And the dearest friend, right? So it throws it, because he's the one that's making all this arrangement. Why? He doesn't have to. We've left him, but he's still, right? What does the niti say? How do you test a friend? Where is friendship tested? In difficulty. Right? So in adversity, when things aren't ideal. So, we're in the material world. That's not exactly ideal. Right? Krishna's still our friend. Right? Even we're not his friend, he's still our friend. So that makes him the best friend, the dearmost friend. Right? Others will come and go, he doesn't. He is the creation, the annihilation, the basis of everything. So then here and there going up bigger. The whole creation itself, so all these things come. The annihilation, he's the one that destroys it. And the basis, everything is based on him. So all those elements of that can be created and destroyed, they're all based on him. Right? It's still all Brahman. The resting place, right, where everything is sitting. Because otherwise, where does the creation sit? You've created it. Where does it sit? It still has to sit somewhere. And the eternal seed, from him everything is generated. There's nothing that's not functioning because of him. He gives heat and he withholds and sends forth rain. You know, so it's, you know, sun comes out, you know, after the class you get a little sun, it's nice, but that's Krishna. Right? So that's all. So because everything is growing, the rain makes everything function. When there's rain there, everything's prosperous. If there's no rain, nothing's prosperous. He is immortality and death personified. Right? So the principle of eternal living, because that's Sat, so he's Sat, he's the basis. Right? And death personified, so everybody's, because of their being situated temporarily, they will all be destroyed. Right? Both spirit and matter are in Krishna. Srila Prabhupada summarizes this section of verses in purport to verse 19. By analyzing all these different energies of Krishna, one can ascertain that for Krishna there is no distinction between matter and spirit. Or in other words, he is both matter and spirit. In the advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, one therefore makes no such distinctions. He sees only Krishna in everything. That's how he can preach. It's not all one, it's Krishna, the person. It's all his energies. Right? So there's Krishna is non-different because he's non-different from his energies. So it's just another energy. Right? You have a glove and you have a shoe, right? So one is yours and one's not yours, right? The glove's on the hand, so that's yours, but the shoe is not exactly yours because it's not so ideal, right? Isn't that how it works? No. So that's the point. So for Krishna, any of his energies, it's all his energy. So he doesn't distinguish. The difficulty is the material means that it's being manifest through an inferior potency. In a spiritual platform, then it's being manifest through a superior, eternal potency. It eternally manifests. The material energy is eternal, but it's temporarily manifest. But still, it's the same. Right? The yogic Brahmins are doing yajna in Braj in the morning, right? When Krishna gets up, they're all chanting mantras and doing yajnas. So is he the chant? Is he the ritual? Is he the ghee? Is he the offering? You understand? It doesn't change. Right? What's the goal of Mother Yashoda's activities in the day?
Serving Krishna.
Serving Krishna. Right? If he's there, does she feel, you know, comfortable in her situation? Right? So he's the shelter. He's the support. You understand? So all these things are non-different. That's where they come from. But the universal form means applying those so that they are applied through this material energy. Because in creation, it's manifest. Spiritual world is always like that. You don't have to, there is no creation or destruction. So you don't have that pastime. That's here. So it's just automatic. Everyone sees Krishna, so you don't have to worry about it. But here, because they don't, therefore all that constant changing. And because one's looking for Krishna, right? So, and one gets, material energy gets boring for the living entity. So there's that constant change of which aspect of material energy you're looking at. Right? And so therefore, there has to be change. Right? And then because that gets overwhelming, there needs to be some rest. Therefore there's disillusion. And then you can take a nice nap. Until the next morning when Brahma wakes up and it all starts happening again. Right? So then another 4,300,000,000 years of insanity, and then you get a nap for that long. Right? That makes sense? So it's basically working on it. So he's both matters, they make no distinction. That's why then, because there's no distinction, that means whatever situation someone's in, whatever their conditioning, you can see Krishna. So that's why the advanced devotee can preach to anyone in any situation. Right? The neophyte functions in a situation that he's comfortable in. In other words, he can preach and won't get distracted. Right? The Madhyama, then he has his preferred areas. Right? Just because it works nicer, it's more efficient, right? So you want to be practical. So where you can preach and it works, then that's where you should preach. Right? At the same time, is the Uttam platform, one can see anything, anywhere. So that's why you see these great devotees, though they're acting as a madhyam and working in their specific areas. But they can deal with anyone, anywhere. Right? So it didn't matter where Prabhupada went in the world, what culture, he was successful. Right? Like he was going to go to that program, was in Japan or in China. And he put together that whole light of the Bhagavad. Because he understood that they liked, you know, analogies and connected with nature and everything. So in other words, worshippers of the universal form. So he just brought that out. That's the autumn, or that's the personified Vedas?
Description of autumn.
Description of autumn, yeah. Because these two, that and the personified. Personified Vedas are actually the original, you know, how you say, form, manifestation of the Bhagavatam. Yeah, Satvata Samhita. Because it's from the personified Vedas, the Vedas themselves, their discussions, and all, that everything comes and others hear, then that goes out and out and out and out. It's disseminated. Like, you know, Vyasadeva is heard from Narad, then he's giving it to Sukha, and then he's, then Suta, and then he's giving it to Shonaka. So like that, the Bhagavatam is just expanding. But its original was the prayers of the personified Vedas. Like that. So, does this make sense? So, how it is that, that the successful preaching is there? Since Krishna is both matter and spirit, the gigantic universal form comprising all material manifestations is also Krishna. And his pastimes in Vrindavan as two-handed Samasundara playing on a flute are those of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the point. He's everything, but then that's what your inspiration is. So you're seeing that Krishna, how he's coming in these pastimes here. But those pastimes are, you know, one's absorption. Right? The sweetness of exchange. So that's what's appreciated. But how much exchange is going on here? You're saying, what's the depth of exchange? As Krishna says, just a very small fraction of his potency is being manifest here. So it's one quarter of the cause of creation, but it's only a spark of his potency. That's all it takes to run the place. Right? It doesn't take much to run dead matter. Right? Because the reciprocation is not very great. But in the spiritual world, there where they fully appreciate, therefore he can manifest fully. Just reading, because Kunti's Prayers of Queen Kunti, she's describing how Krishna's, you know, how you say, equal with everyone. And then Prabhupada's in the purport defining that just like the sun, it gives its light. Its light is there. Anyone can take advantage. But the point is only some take advantage. Right? So it's not that it's not there for... So Krishna is giving the facility for anyone to be Krishna conscious. You know, to fulfill their needs and desires. But as they actually appreciate, then he reciprocates. So if they only see him as karma or as jnana or as yoga, then that he reciprocates. If one sees his devotion, then he reciprocates that. Therefore, it appears he's... partial to the devotees. Like that. But he's not actually. But it's because the devotees deal with them that. But that's what he's interested in. But that that facility that anybody could be in that position to interact with God so he appears to be partial is open to anybody. Does that make sense? Verses 20 to 25 describe the demigod worshippers and compare them with the devotees. Those who study the Vedas with the purpose of attaining the heaven and planets are indirect worshippers of Krishna. Purified of sins, they attain Indra's abode to enjoy godly delights. After their pious activities are exhausted, they again fall down to this mortal planet. Thus, sense enjoyment through the Vedas results in repeated birth and death. Verses 20 to 21. But notice in here is that you do good work, then Krishna doesn't have any problem that you get facilities. Right? But if the facilities aren't connected to him, then you'll fall down again here. They'll be taken away. Does that make sense? And even if you say, okay, well, I'll do everything connected to Krishna so he won't take it away, but Krishna's pointing out that then he's beyond what you're getting from... beyond as a person what you're getting from the facility. And what you're getting from the facility is actually him. Just you're indirectly worshipping him. Right? So he's always trying to bring to this direct. Does that make sense? So that means then if you apply this, it's not a problem if the community has facilities. oh, he has a Mercedes, who do you think he is? All this is all Maya. It doesn't matter. If it's used for Krishna, what do you care? The guy who runs the temple business, like that, he keeps a certain percentage. But, you know, he's good at it, so it starts growing. So, okay, he gets, $1,000 a month and, gives, $3,000-$4,000 to the temple, and that's cool. Okay. Now, what happens when he's giving $100,000 to the temple and he's making $25,000? So, according to this principle, it's not a problem. But if you don't understand this, why should I have $25,000? You used to have $1,000. So she gives 99 to the temple and keep only 1,000. So now, is his business going to work? No, because he's not inspired. And then, oh, he's not sincere. He's in Maya. No, it's just because you think it's important. The point is you used to get 3,000. Now you get 75,000. So isn't that not good? Understand? So this principle is, it doesn't matter if they're facility. If they've worked for it, why they shouldn't have it? They didn't work for it and they demand it, that's another thing. Does this make sense? So you can see, you want to say the philosophy is not practical. It's very practical. You don't know this philosophy, you'll make this mistake. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan writes in his commentary to verse 20. Though they do not know that the forms of Indra and other devatas are my forms alone, they are actually worshipping me, who am situated in those respective forms, by Jyotishtoma and other sacrifices prescribed in the three Vedas. Drinking the remnants of sacrifice, soma, and being purified of sins, which obstruct their attainment of swarga, they pray for swarga. It should be understood that the enjoyment they obtain is actually given only by me. So the demigod, the position, the potency that's there, what they give, how it's given, what you can do with it after you get it, the enjoyment you get from it, that's all Krishna. So if that's appreciated, then that starts. But then with time, the point is what Krishna's getting. With time, there's still him as a person. So what would he like? The beginning, it's what I like, and I'm seeing Krishna, and now it's so great, and I feel one's advancing, one's being purified. But then as one gets purified, then it's kind of like, well, what about Krishna as a person? What is it? What is he like about it? So it's the interaction with him that's important, not the focus on the indirect. In other words, you're doing the indirect activity, but you're focusing on the direct. That's what Krishna's interested in. Does that make sense? Verse 22 contrasts the demigod worshippers with the devotees. Devotees who worship Krishna in exclusive devotion are awarded perfect Krishna consciousness. Once they are situated in Krishna consciousness, the Lord protects them from falling to conditioned life. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada defines exclusive devotion as follows. One who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, and remembering, offering prayers, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord without difficulty. Right, because if you fall, then you're not approaching. So such a devotee will always approach. So it'll work in that direction. Interesting here, serving the lotus feet of the Lord and rendering other services. That dasyam. In other words, the Lord, his paraphernalia, and then other services. Can go beyond. Like that. Verse 22 is confirmed again in chapter 12, verses 6 to 7. But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service, and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Prita, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Right, so we see here the focus on the activity being done in relation to Krishna, and always being absorbed in Krishna. Right? So that naturally goes together. To do that, to do the activity, you have to have knowledge. You know, to think about Krishna, then there has to be something that you've associated with to catch the attention. The Lord personally takes his devotees back to the spiritual world. This is in contrast with the yogis who are promoted to higher positions by the demigods. Bhagavad Gita 8:24. So he's contrasting. He's giving their position and then shows. So the demigod worship, they go and they enjoy it, but they come back. Right? Does that make sense? But the devotees, then they don't. Taking care of the devotees is not a burden for the Lord, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary. One should not say that in giving the burden of their maintenance to the worshipable Lord, the devotees show lack of prema. In fact, they do not give me that burden. I, by my own will, accept it. It should also be understood that I am not bearing it as duty, as I create and maintain the universe by my will alone. Rather, being attached to my devotees, I take the greatest pleasure in taking care of their needs, like carrying the weight of one's lover. Right? So always in this comment, it's like Krishna speaking, you know, so making, bringing out these finer points. Right? So it's not, oh, I don't want to go to Krishna for this, then who are you going to go to? Oh, I don't want to bother Krishna with this, then who are you going to bother? You know, it's not good to bother. It means there's higher levels of dealing with Krishna than bothering with material facility or anxieties or other things. But if you don't go to him, where are you going to go? Then where is the Krishna consciousness? So it seems, oh yeah, no, it's Maya, so I won't go to Krishna for this. Great, but then where are you going to go? Then you depend upon yourself? Then you're the Lord? You know, you're the doer? You're the cause. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Better you go to him. But at the same time, is then he's showing that more is that the devotee is just dependent upon Krishna, always absorbed in serving Krishna, so he's not worried about his own maintenance. So Krishna takes care of that. So in any case, it's not a problem. So one he directly takes care of, the other one he takes care of through his agencies. Right? He gets it done. You know, just like, let's say someone comes and they want something done, so he calls the secretary, he says, okay, take care of this. So through his machinations, it gets done. Right? But then the other is that the person comes and because of his closeness, then he'll personally do it himself. You know, he'll personally call that person and get him, you know, get this and like this and bring it, see that's all nice, and then... Does that make sense? So that's the difference. According to verse 15, the demigod worshippers worship Krishna indirectly. Verse 23 answers the question, since the demigod worshippers are ultimately worshipping Krishna, surely they will receive the same results as Krishna's unalloyed devotees. It is true that those who worship demigods are worshipping Krishna, but they do it in a wrong way. Right? Krishna is pointing this out. They have incorrect knowledge and follow an incorrect process. Therefore, the result they achieve is imperfect. Right? So, because the knowledge is wrong, therefore the process will be wrong. Your knowledge is right, your process will be right. So, therefore, your goal will be right. So, their worship is compared to watering the leaves instead of watering the root. Krishna is the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Because these demigod worshippers do not recognize his true transcendental nature, they fall down in material existence. Right, because they'll be elevated, but then they'll come back down again. And you think, okay, according to Jaimini, you elevate yourself to the heavenly planets, enjoy there, come back here, do more pious activities, and go back again. Hey, it goes on eternally. Maybe you say, okay, well, the universe is destroyed, but the universe will be recreated again. And then when it's recreated, you'll come back into it with the same pious activities as you had done before. So don't worry, you don't lose anything. That's his theory. Right? Sounds good. No. But problem is that Krishna says they fall down. Because there they have so much sense enjoyment. And then when they come here, you can't get that kind of sense enjoyment. And so how will they get it? Through pious activities? No, they want it right now because the demigods were just enjoying it. So they want to enjoy now. That's the practice. So what will they do? Impious activities, sinful activities. So then what will happen? Then they'll go down, right? Come on, we need plants and animals. You know, otherwise, it'd be like what, Little Prince or something, you know, ball and guy standing on it, you know, nothing else there, you know. So. Those who worship demigods will take birth among them, while those who worship ancestors will go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will reach such beings. Those who worship Krishna will live with him. Right? So when some you know, different people think that their ancestors are, you know, I think it's one of them thinks they're alligators, you know, different, I think they're different things, then they will go there. So they will be ancestors. You know. So then cycle goes on. In his commentary to this verse, Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan compares the devotees and the demigod worshippers. So this is verse, 23. The worshippers of beings other than me thinks as follows. Quote, we are worshippers of Indra and other devatas. They are our lords. Being pleased by a service, they will give us the result we desire. End quote. My devotees think as follows. Quote, the son of Vasudev, the lord of all, endowed with all powers, who is situated in the devatas, who is our master, being worshipped by easily obtainable items and actions, will give all our desired results. End quote. Though they perform exactly the same actions, those who serve the devatas attain their desired goals alone, because of their distaste of thinking of me. They, with short lifespan, attain meager fortune, and after enjoying those limited items, they are also destroyed along with those forms of enjoyment. So meager enjoyment. So being Indra or being, that is meager enjoyment. And after enjoying those limited items, okay, but those who serve me attain me. I am the Lord of all beings, the beginningless shelter. I fulfill all desires, have infinite powers, am composed of pure knowledge and bliss, and am most affectionate to the devotees. They never leave me. They experience unlimited happiness close to me and play in my divine abode. In verses 11 to 25, the Lord described different types of worship. In the last 9 verses of this chapter, 26 to 34, he encourages us, for our own good, to worship him in the mood of pure devotion. Okay. So the same duty is performed, but the one is thinking, I'm doing my duties, and the results are going to come from these demigods. I've done my duties, they will be pleased, they will give me all my facilities. But the devotee understands is that it's Krishna's potency that's in the devata. So it's Krishna that's actually doing this. So this activity is the same, Krishna is saying. And because of this, then the devotee attains whatever the demigod would be giving, because the potency in the demigod that's actually giving is Krishna. But the difference is the one will attain the demigods, and then after some time, you know, that will all be finished. You know, the piety, the demigods, the place of the demigods, right? So, Brahma's end of the day, you know, up through Indra's planet, everything's all destroyed. So everything's wiped out. So, but the devotee, then he performs the same activities, and then he goes back to Godhead. He's with Krishna. So, yeah. Any questions on this? Yes. I told you that one about the on the okay. Go ahead.
We don't take devotional service because directly and suddenly now it's because of insecurity, right?
Directly and now it's because of insecurity. Yes, that's why Bhagavatam, you see this first story, is there's an element of establishing security. right? You know, I mean, if you have a Brahmastra directed at your womb, then, you know, if someone can save you from that, then, you know, it shows he can do, he's pretty good. Right? That's the most powerful weapon in the universe. Right? So if he can protect you from that, then, so that potionum, that protection, that nourishment, that's one of the first things that's established in Bhagavatam. So we're trying to become secure that Krishna will take care, right? Like, see, Draupadi, she tried at first to protect herself, but then when she couldn't, then she surrendered to Krishna, then Krishna supplied the... Sorry, she wasn't supplying beforehand. It wasn't that she's trying and then she notices, wow, look at all that huge pile of sari there. Because I could let go and, you know, he could be pulling all day and he would never... No. Is that when she surrendered, then it happened. Does that make sense? So that's the point of faith. As the faith matures, one advances. So that's the thing. So that faith will mean that one is secure. That's why Krishna keeps saying this point. But those who serve me attain me. I am the Lord of all beings, the beginningless shelter. I fulfill all desires. I have infinite power. So, beginningless shelter. So it's there, I fulfill all desires. How does he do that? Through unlimited powers. I am composed of pure knowledge and bliss. So, you know, everything is there. So, Satchitananda, you don't get more than that. So that's... Right? And most affectionate. Okay, so maybe there may be boring, but no, he's affectionate. Right? Because others and others, you know, you go, you know, to heaven or whatever, then what's the relation with God? Where's the exchange? Right? It's not mentioned, really. Right. They experience unlimited happiness close to me and play in my divine abode. Right? So then you'll be feel comfortable. You know? Is that okay? Just hear the background.
So the demigods and the demigod worshippers, they do good work and they get good results. It seems somehow that they're getting a little too good results or good results in the wrong way or something.
No, but the point is why are they getting good results?
Because they're pious.
They're pious, but what does that piety consist of?
Activity.
And that activity is connected to? Yeah, but they don't see it. No. That's why they're getting that result, but it's so less. That, just like this. Krishna is saying they're doing although they perform exactly the same actions, those who serve the devatas attain their desired goals alone because of the distaste of thinking of me. Right? But those who serve me attain me. They experience unlimited happiness close to me and plain. So you're performing an activity. One, you're getting unlimited happiness eternally. And the other, you're getting a great amount of happiness for a short time. So how is that they're getting too much? Or they're getting too little? Right?
Yeah.
And why are they getting too little? Because they're not seeing it in connection to the Lord. So therefore, they only get what they want. What's the problem? The guy is very pious. You know, he's been getting up, taking his cold morning bath every day of his life. You know, does that make sense? He does his puja, he does his chants, his mantras, he reads his scripture, you know, he goes to the temple every day. So, why you would not want to see him get a good result? Why do you think it's too much?
No. What I'm thinking is that if he got a little less, then maybe he would start connecting to Krishna and not get so lax and enjoy so much.
But the thing is he's getting less and then he may go somewhere else.
Yeah. We don't want that.
Yeah. But the point is less means he is getting less. He's still birth and death. That's still less. See, because you're comparing it to what we get here.
Yeah.
You know, I go 9-to-5 job and I only get, you know, this much. But this guy, if he did puja and worship that much, you know, he may become Indra. You know, so why is he getting so much and I'm getting so little? Because he's connecting to the Shastra. He's leading the pious lifestyle. And then the other person is not. You know, or even if he is and he's getting less, that's just the position from before. You've done something, so now, you know, you're in a position where for your full day's work you get less. But if you perform your duties, then you're elevated. So depending upon how high up you connect it, that's how far you go. Does that make sense? Like that. So you have to compare it to eternal, in eternity. Not then it's like it's a little bit meager. You know, it's just like okay, the guy's got a Ferrari. But says yeah, but Indra's got you know a chariot with 1,000 horses, and it can fly in the sky. You know, so, you know what I'm saying? You know, can you imagine, you pulled up, they always have the joke, you know, the limousine, you know, pulls up and it just keeps going, you know, goes fast and then finally you get to the end, like that. So, 1,000 horses, you know how long they would be going by that red carpet before you finally get out? You know, like that, people would be like, who is this? Like that. No one will be looking at those limousines anymore. Yes?
Just on this point of not jeopardizing the security, that would also be connected to the preacher not taking the beginning from what is good.
Yeah, it means you keep what's good. You ignore what's bad. I mean, you just sidestep what's bad and start with what's good because that is part of their identity. That is their value. It's just one side of it. What they consider secondary is actually the main. You know, it's like people say, you know, they got to have a house. Why do they have to have a house?
Security.
But are they going to say, I need security, so therefore I'm going to get a house? People don't talk like that. Just, I need a house. You understand? So what's actually primary, they're taking is secondary. What's secondary, they're taking is primary. Right? So the Adi Daivik and the Adi Yajna, that's primary. But they're taking the Adi Bhautik. So all you're doing is taking the Adi Daivik and Adi Yajic elements of what they're doing. Because they only see the Adi Bhautik. So you start with that. And they won't complain because that is what they're looking for. And if need be, if they don't mention it, you can bring it out. Well, you know, so you know, everybody has a house because they want to be secure, so secure is there. Or ask them in questions. Why do you? You know, it depends on the forum. That makes sense. Yeah. So we'll end here. And we'll continue tomorrow with the 26 to 34. Is that 9 verses? But they go for a while.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
It's like we said before, the Hare Krishna is the sampat. Om is also there, but the Om is not because it's essential for chanting. Or because of that, it's the Om is because then we'll all hit the same note before we start saying Hare Krishna. Otherwise, it's a bit of a cacophony. You know, so.